I've got great aspirations. I'm already a big celebrity as a pilot. Soon I'll be a Hollywood star. And then...
There's more?
The president!
What?
Hello, everyone, and a happy September to all of you here on the Next Lander Watchcast. We did it, folks. We made anime happen on the Next Lander Watchcast. We achieved it.
Sure, it didn't exist before. Well, it existed. Nobody really knew about this amazing art form before we brought it to light.
It's true. Until we created the world's first anime podcast, how no one could have ever known about the wonderful world of animation from the nation of Japan. Vinny Caravella.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we feel like it's important to kind of reach out and expose people to. And
yeah.
A lot of fun ideas in there, a lot of fun concepts floating around out there that aren't just U.S.-centric. And we really think that's important for everybody to kind of absorb. And I'm glad it's 2023.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Brad Shoemaker, how has your anime experience been so far?
Well, now I'm just wondering how many times the phrase animation nation has been used for something.
I would probably guess a lot, actually.
A lot.
Yeah.
It's been good.
That's good.
It's been, I started to come in here and say, is this anime? Is this movie anime? Is it its own thing? I don't know. That's probably a distinction not worth pondering.
You know, as much as I joke about the is Studio Ghibli anime, is it not thing, I don't really care. I leave that up to the experts in the grand scheme of things. But my personal opinion has always been, is it animation that comes from Japan? Then it's anime.
Fair.
You have the right to be wrong. I mean,
that's fine. Yeah. I'm good with being wrong.
I will say, as a movie about a pilot pig, this is probably one of the more normal things that we have watched in quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. Like, as much as this movie does have its fantastical elements, I mean, this shit just takes place in Southern Europe, man. Like, it's just, other than there being a pig man and more sky pirates than I remember there being in the 1930s, I don't necessarily think this is a particularly outlandish film. Now, the film we are going to be talking about today is our first on the Watchcast Studio Ghibli film, Porco Rosso. This was voted on by our patrons. It was my personal pick. You guys both picked a couple of Satoshi Kon films. They did not win, but we will probably do a Satoshi Kon month at some point because there's only like four movies of his. And Porco Rosso is, it wasn't my first Ghibli, but it was an early one for me, though it did come after the Disney dub came around. So I had not heard the original Japanese language version the first time I watched it, or the original English dub, which we'll talk about the history of that in a moment here. But so I'd love to hear from the rest of the cast. What is your guys' Ghibli experience? What do you guys know about the world of Hayao Miyazaki?
I saw Mononoke, Princess Mononoke, in a theater when it came out. When it had that, was it Miramax that put that out?
Yes.
That's like a whole other topic here, is their distribution in the U.S. being all tied up with Miramax and Disney and stuff. Thought that movie was incredible. Own it on disc. Think I've seen Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle.
Okay.
I think I saw both of those.
Both of those hit theaters around the same time, you know, a few years after the fact. So, like, that was definitely, like, when the Ghibli wave was really going through the U.S.
Yes. I think that's all I've seen.
Okay. Vinny, what's your experience level?
I'm very casual. I'm a very casual Ghibli. People really love a lot of the entire catalog, really.
Like, the vast majority, I think, and especially anything tied to Miyazaki himself.
I think I'll say I generally enjoy what I see, but I don't have a great affection for it like a lot of people do. I have watched Totoro, My Neighbor Totoro, a couple of times, and while it's very moving and I think it's a great film, I don't have that personal stake in that series, in that studio. But
a big fluffy cat monster isn't enough to warm your heart entirely.
It's adorable, and I think generally the vibe from those from the Ghibli stuff is very moving. Like, it's very emotionally moving, and it's very well done. But I'm not on the level that some people are with the Studio Ghibli stuff.
So you're saying you need to raise your Ghibli level?
I probably need to raise my Ghibli. That's what my doctor says. Lower my cholesterol, raise my Ghiblis.
Yeah, fair enough. So I think I've seen the majority of Miyazaki-aligned Ghibli stuff. There's a few I haven't seen. I have not seen the, I think The Wind Rises. I don't remember if I've seen Castle in the Sky or not. But Mononoke was my first one. And that was one of those movies that I ended up seeing specifically because it was on TV late at night back when after I had dropped out of high school and I was just staying up all night and was just kind of living the dirtbag lifestyle at home. It's how I discovered a lot of random TV shows, a lot of movies that I had not seen. I would just be flipping through the channels at like 2 a.m. on a Wednesday, and then HBO or something would have that on and be like, all right, I'll see what this is about. And I remember I started watching it like 5 minutes into it, I think. I just missed that very opening thing, and I was just hooked. And so much so that the next time I saw it airing on HBO, I started it again and watched it from the beginning. That movie really blew my mind open and made me want to dig more and more into this stuff. And you know, yeah, I've seen Howl's Moving Castle. I've seen Spirited Away. I had seen Porco Rosso before, though it has been some time since I sat down to watch, The Adventures of, Flying Pigman. and I don't know, this movie has a real outsized reputation, I think. I don't mean outsized in that it's undeserved, but whenever I bring this movie up or I see people talking about it, it's always like, oh, this is my favorite Ghibli, or, you know, maybe it's not the best one, but it's the one I enjoy the most. It seems to have an extremely intense following of people who really love it, and I'll say I do really love it. I think this movie is a delight.
Delight is literally the word I was going to come in and use.
Yeah.
It is delightful, for sure.
Yeah, I feel like it doesn't have the, like, you're going to wind up in a puddle of tears kind of moments that maybe I've had in other Miyazaki stuff of like, oh, no, don't. Why would you make that choice? It's got the vibe, and I'm not just saying this because of the Tailspin analogs here.
Oh,
but
boy.
It does have the vibe of like that carefree kind of Disney afternoon vibe to it. Of like, this is just a romp, you know?
I had that thought watching it that like, if I had seen this as a kid, like the idea of your own little secret island cove base and a seaplane you can just get in and fly around in anytime you want would have been like unbelievably potent as a child.
Not that I think they need to go out there and make a bunch of Ghibli licensed video games, but if ever there was one that felt like it would have made for a great rip-roaring video game adventure, I feel like this is one.
Yeah, it immediately wanted me to have this a like Porco Rosso plane in flight simulator. Like just put the plane in there, have it take off from a little island, and like have the engine go out every once in a while.
Yep.
I wonder if another reason for its deep popularity is this kind of, it has this like continental European feel to it, you know, this like wartime in Europe, kind of not quite Casablanca-ish, but you know what I mean? Like it's in a little bit of that vibe of like romance in dire straits kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely taken a little Casablanca, like more than a heaping spoonful of Casablanca and mixing it in with its Porco Rosso. Here.
I mean, it's Casablanca, but it's other old Hollywood, too, because I mean, like the Curtis character might as well just be Errol Flynn.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. You know, like that is totally the vibe. I mean, to the point where they literally cast Cary Elwes in the Disney adaptation or dub.
Yes.
Who is the most Errol Flynn guy of my lifetime. That's for sure.
For sure.
For sure.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit here about the history of the film before we get into kind of our thoughts and impressions and talk about what happens in it. So this was 1992. Studio Ghibli had been established for a bit here. Miyazaki does have some credits prior to founding Studio Ghibli, like that Lupin the Third movie, I think, that he worked on. And I want to say Nausicaä is not a Ghibli film, I don't think, but it is Miyazaki. But the studio had been around for a bit. And the way this movie came together is maybe the most interesting, like, tidbit outside of the actual film about it. It was financed partially by Japan Airlines.
Huh.
And the reason for that, okay, so the story is based on another Miyazaki work called Hikote Jidai, The Age of the Flying Boat, which is a three-part watercolor manga that he released in 1989 in some magazine. And so this adaptation was intended to be a 30 to 45 minute short film that would be exclusive to Japan Airlines. And over the course of making it, it grew into a feature length production, which is why it eventually moved to a theatrical release. But Japan Airlines is still one of the producers, and they had the broadcast film rights for it on their planes before it hit theaters in Japan, which is why you see that multilingual title card at the very beginning, which is sort of like, you know, the airline, sort of like, you know, the safety video stuff.
Huh. I thought that was a fun little yeah. way to do that.
God, I was trying to think back on, like, what was movie viewing on an airplane like in the early 90s, and it was just straight up, like, the big screen at the front of the plane,
yep.
wasn't it?
Totally. Mm-hmm. No individual screens at all back then.
That you, if you weren't in the first, like, 12 rows, you were kind of screwed.
Yep. And so, as a part of that, they did also create an English dub that was not the one that I think a lot of the people in the West experienced for the first time.
He's on the way to attack another ship.
Mama Utah? Hey, I'm on holiday.
The ship's delivering the company payroll.
Call someone else.
We need your help. There's a bunch of vacationing schoolgirls on board.
It's going to be expensive.
But then the Disney, you know, when Disney eventually picked up the rights to the Ghibli stuff and brought it over, they financed a new dub that features the likes of Michael Keaton. We mentioned Cary Elwes. There is also, I think, like, Brad Garrett is in there. Tom Kenny does a voice in it. It's a pretty good cast. And I will say, actually, it is legitimately one of the best dubs I have heard of a Japanese animated film.
Isn't David Ogden Steers in it?
I think so, yeah.
Yes, as the mechanic guy, I believe.
Yeah.
Rick Welker is credited in it.
Yeah, like, it's a really good cast, and my first experience with Ghibli dubs was the Mononoke one, which is also, by and large, very good. There are a couple of actors who maybe are not in the rhythm of it as well, but, like, you know, Billy Crudup is fucking amazing in that,
like,
movie.
That movie, it's like Billy Bob Thornton is in it, Mimi Dryer, like, it's mm-hmm. like names.
Gillian Anderson,
for that movie, for
Jada
sure.
Jada Pinkett, yeah, like, it's a big cast. And this is, you know, it's not as many names, but I feel like the quality is really good, and Michael Keaton is a really fantastic Porco Rosso, though apparently the French dub also has Jean Renault doing Porco Rosso, and that is apparently Miyazaki's favorite dub of it.
Il est question de confisquer ton hydravion de combat.
C'est vraiment un AV, ce film. Écoute, Marco, réintègre l'armée de l'air le plus vite possible pour que nous puissions t'aider. Je préfère encore être un cochon décadent qu'un fasciste.
That's pretty good. I can tell you exactly the time, if you give me a second. I made it almost exactly 10 minutes into this movie with the Japanese language track before it finally hit me, or I finally had enough, and I was like, okay, clearly this movie is too much of a visual feast to be looking at subtitles.
Okay. Mm.
I had to run the calculus very quickly of, am I gaining more by hearing the original voiceover than I am losing in not, like, just, like, basking in the sumptuousness of this visual?
Totally.
And I very quickly decided, like, okay, it is worth way more to look at this movie head on than it is to hear the original voice acting.
The original voice acting, I think, is very good, but I think this movie in particular, you really don't lose much by going the dub route again, because I think it is very high quality. That said, you do miss a performance by Japanese actor, Aki Otsuka, who...
Nope. Yes.
You know who that is?
Uh-huh. Solid Snake?
Yeah. Japanese Solid Snake.
Why Foxhound?
Metal Gear's development was very quickly. フォックスハウンドは未だに影の部隊だから隠密行動にはもってこいなのよ
しかし模擬弾頭発射実験ならこれまでも行われていたはずだなぜ今回に限って
Yep
He is Curtis in this film
Sure.
And he's very good
Sure
Yeah It's a great cast kind of any way you go except maybe that original English dub which I heard a couple of lines from I was like it's not as good
Also, I was, like, clawing at my memory for about another 20 to 30 minutes after that, trying to figure out who Porco Rosso is. And finally got there without seeing the credits. And I was like, God damn it, that's got to be Michael Keaton, right?
Mm-hmm. The Keat dog.
There's a certain distinctive quality to his delivery that it's, like, he kind of, like, chews on it a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah.
Mr. Rosso, we've got a job for you. The Mama Ayuto gang is on the move.
The Mama Ayuto gang? I don't know. Kind of busy.
We need you to protect one of our ships that's carrying a fortune in gold.
Is that all?
Well, there's a group of schoolgirls on board, too.
Now that is going to cost you.
See here, bounty hunter. No price gouging. We've got a contract with you.
Yeah. I'm on it.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like he leans into it in a way that it doesn't just sound like Michael Keaton, though it's still very recognizable. I think that dub was commissioned a lot later, though. So, like, this wouldn't have been Keat Dog during the Batman days. This would have been, like, early to mid-2000s, I think.
Yeah. Didn't Disney went back and, like, re-released a bunch of
they did
stuff
yes.
in the post-Mononoke era?
Yeah.
And I think
yeah, when
was,
they
like,
secured
some...
the rights, they re-released a whole bunch of it.
And I think, wasn't there something about, like, John Lasseter at Pixar as his clout grew? Like, this is his favorite stuff, so he... got them to spend money on it or something along those lines, I forget.
Well, him and Hayao Miyazaki have also formed a friendship over the years. Oh, okay. Like, Miyazaki has talked reams of shit about Disney animation in general, and they keep coming back, and I think it's because he's become friends with, like, John Lasseter and stuff. And also, he's a fucking legend. He can just talk all the shit he wants.
Yes, you never know how sensationalized stuff like this is, but I remember when Mononoke came out over here, there was a ton of hype in the press about, like, it's the highest grossing film in Japanese history. And everybody was referring to Miyazaki as like the Japanese Walt Disney, like
and he's
just
a,
like a succession of beloved films.
He's a fascinating figure to me. Like, I mean, obviously, I love a lot of his work as an artist, but like as a person, he's just kind of fascinating to me because he's a legendary grump. Like he he hates most anime, or at least every time he talks about anime as like a larger genre, it's usually to like say, "I think this part of it sucks," and. You know, when he's not talking shit about the animation industry or, you know, the like politics or whatever, then he immediately shifts over to just talking about how bad an animator his son is.
Oh, I did watch that clip at some point where people said he walked out on his son's movie.
Yeah.
I didn't look. He looks like he maybe just went outside and have a little smoke, and, you know.
So the story of Gorō Miyazaki is not, I can't recount the whole thing here, but Gorō had another career and then at some point decided he wanted to direct animated films like his dad. And his dad is like, you shouldn't do this. Not in like a, I hate you way, but more of like a, if you're going to follow my footsteps, I would really love it if you had more talent than you do kind of like kind of way. And I think that's the thing is that he is just kind of generally disappointed that his son has chosen this path and, like, it just does not see the quality in his work.
That's a lot. That's a lot to live up to there.
It is. And he's a very critical dad, as critical dads go.
Is he still making stuff now, or is he kind of semi-retired or retired?
So I think he's technically semi-retired, though I want to say that he may have come out of retirement somewhat recently. I'm going to look this up real fast because I want to make sure I'm correct. Because I want to say The Wind Rises was... supposed to be his last film, but then yes, he has another thing that is, if it hasn't come out here yet, it will.
Okay.
The Boy and the Heron,
and he's attached to it.
Yes, it has already come out in Japan apparently.
Okay.
I don't know when or if that's coming out here, but I believe I don't know if it actually is supposed to be Miyazaki's last film, if he has actually said that or not, but like the number of films he is working on these days is a lot lower than it used to be.
I mean, I'm sure he will probably touch stuff for the rest of his life, you know, in some way. I mean, he's in his 80s now, right?
If not 80s, then definitely late 70s.
Yeah. So I bet he will like bounce around stuff for as long as
he's 82.
Can. Okay. Yeah. So like, man, I bet he'll just, you know, add his certain style of criticism and grumpiness to whatever project he's working on for the rest of his life.
Okay, so yeah, he did in fact say he was retiring in 2013 after The Wind Rises came out, and he came out specifically to make this new one out of retirement.
Okay.
But my understanding was that he had spent the last 10 years mostly just like hanging out and like picking up trash around his neighborhood and just like chilling, you know?
I mean, 82, you chill.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure what to expect with Porco Rosso.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know if this was like going to be. It's a weird one. I mean,
it is.
A lot of his stuff is weird.
Even Miyazaki
guess, like...
considers this one a little bit of a weird outlier in his catalog. Not in that he doesn't like it or anything, but like there's a couple of things about it. One, it takes place in a much more identifiable real world than other Miyazaki films do. Like there are real world elements in most of his films. But like this is actual locations. It's Southern Europe, you know. It's the Adriatic Sea. Like they're real places and real nation states being discussed here. And the other thing is that when he was making it, the war in Yugoslavia started in 1991. Mm-hmm. And he said that put a real weird damper on the whole thing while he was making it. It kind of changed the tone of the story in a few ways. And he is specifically quoted as saying he thinks making this film was a little bit foolish. Again, not in a way that he says like he hates it or anything, but at the time, I think he believed that making an adult-oriented animated film for kids was a foolish pursuit.
Anime was a mistake.
But
I've heard.
But you know what? It did well is the thing. Like it did whatever foolishness he may think it may have been. This movie was very successful both in Japan and in the US.
That's kind of interesting to hear because I'm not going to say the movie like tackles heavy subjects because it doesn't really tackle them so much as just mention them incidentally. But, you know, like they talk about fascists in this and stuff like that, you know, and when I saw stuff like that, I was just like, oh, well, like they just have a different tradition of animation over there. Like they just do more adult stuff in animation than we were used to as children here in the United States. But then like hearing that maybe actually wasn't so common after all there even is kind of surprising.
Well, so you mentioned the fascist thing. Better a pig than a fascist is definitely the line from this movie that has become the most memed and most shared out there, to the point where it became, I'm quoting Wikipedia here, it became a rallying symbol among some Spanish artist circles, encouraging people to vote against conservative to far-right parties in Spain's 2023 general elections.
Huh.
That's recent.
That's very recent. Yeah. And in fact, when this movie has been brought up in interviews with Miyazaki, and he has talked what little he's talked about possibly doing a sequel to it, I don't think that's ever actually going to happen. Mm. But the one that he did bandy around was a future sequel that took place during the Spanish Civil War.
Interesting.
With old man, you know, Porco out there doing his business.
So this is a Earth-like place where
it is Earth.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, this is like, Europe.
Yeah, it 100% is.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, look, if it's Earth, then we'll get into discussions on whether Porco Rosso, it really turns into a pig or some kind of metaphorical mask we're wearing for his disenchantment with humanity, because I have never seen a person turn into a pig on this actual Earth, but there are plenty of people who act like them.
True.
So the
backstory for that, because they never say in the film what the curse was, how it happened, you know, what happened to him. But I guess the gist of it is that he cursed himself because he had become so disillusioned with humanity.
That was a vibe I got.
And that, you know, he basically said when men become middle-aged, they become pigs. So that was like a very literalized version of that.
Yeah. So like that was like, again, pretty sure in this version of whatever reality we're talking about, you can actually turn into a pig.
Apparently.
And it's not just like a allegory for, you know,
no.
Your
disillusionment. He turned himself into a damn pig because he was so pissed off at everyone.
But he was an ace. He was an ace pilot.
Yep, in World War One.
Italian. Italian ace pilot, World War One. Saw all his buddies get shot down, and then saw them go to plane heaven.
Yes, they ascended to plane heaven, which, you know, that dream sequence is definitely one of the most visually striking things I think anywhere in this movie, and it has a lot of visually striking scenes. But yes, he decides that he is going to abandon the military life, and make his hay as a freelance mercenary, basically, like just out there. But like not in a I'm going to go out there and kill a bunch of people kind of way. More of a when you need some sky pirates taken care of, you call Porco.
Yeah, he's the best.
He's the best.
And where's he hanging out? Where is the cove? Is he in France? Like, where is he?
So where he is, I actually did look this up. If I can find the spot, it's based on a real island, though it is not specifically that island. It is Staniva Beach, I think in the vicinity of Croatia, in the Adriatic Sea. Okay. There's a real island there that looks a lot like that. But that is the general area where he is hanging out.
Okay.
The Dalmatian and Kvarner Islands.
Okay. So he is basically, this is all around Italy and stuff around the Adriatic Sea.
Yeah. Italy, Greece, like Croatia, like southern Eastern Europe.
Oh, where is Gina's restaurant seemed like it might be in France.
That's what I thought, yeah, just because she was singing, but it seems like he's pretty close to that thing. I don't know if he's flying all around Europe, but maybe he is.
I mean, if he's just sticking to the coast, I mean, that's a distance, but it's not like an impossible distance for a plane of that size to cross.
Yeah, it's definitely outside of Italy, because remember, that's right before they're like, don't come back to Italy, you're wanted there.
Right, mm-hmm. And he goes to Milan, he flies it to Milan.
So it's got to be somewhere else.
It could be one of those, look, there's a lot of countries over there along the coast. Maybe at some point they were like, they speak French. It could be one of those countries that mm-hmm. like have, French as, or were colonized by France at some point. So I don't know. Maybe. But yeah, that's the Casablanca-like thing that I feel like is the most there. This bar where we're like, hey, you put your politics aside and you mm-hmm. come listen to the music.
Yeah. You here to listen to this lady sing in French, all right? You're not here to do anything else.
That's right.
Least of all, try and get an interview with Porco Rosso when he's there.
That's right. The Americans will sit you down.
I truly love this opening sequence that happens before they get to the bar, like the first introduction of the Sky Pirates and him just absolutely whipping their asses up and down the coastline as they try to raid a boat that has a bunch of fucking swim team moppets on it that they kidnap and are just having the fucking time of their life, almost dying on the seaplane.
Looks like we're safe.
Hey, look, we're flying.
What's going on down there? Now, girls, this is not a playground. Hey, can't you shut them up?
I told you that we shouldn't have taken them all. Ah, my nose.
Yeah, all right. Just don't let the boss know.
Red plane.
What? Where?
That was Porco. Yeah.
All right. Let's get this thing over with.
He's back!
It is Porco!
Cut it out!
Ha ha! That's not good.
Engine's got flash!
No, we're not. We've got another engine.
These pirates just look like they're trying to get some money there. Like,
I think they're dumb. I think these are doofuses. I think they might not be the best pirates.
They might not be the best pirates.
What did you think of Brad? I think Brad Garrett is like the lead pirate on, if I remember correctly, on the dub.
I did the Japanese voice track, so I didn't hear Brad.
Good comic relief.
Yeah,
I guess. I couldn't tell you who Brad Garrett actually is.
He's the brother character on Everybody Loves Raymond. He has that super deep voice.
Okay. Yes.
You might know what he looks like. Okay. Yeah.
Yes, I looked him up. Yes, of course.
Yeah.
My girlfriend really likes that character also.
Yeah,
she'd love this movie.
The pirates are a great comic relief group. Like, they're ridiculous, but they have, like, a certain code of honor. So they're not really villains, you know? This movie actually doesn't really have hardcore villains in it in any major way. Like, obviously there's the fascist government, which, you know, Porco wants something to do with, but other than just kind of being a looming threat in the background, they don't really do very much in this movie. It's really just Porco getting into this rivalry with Curtis, who is an American pilot that is doing more or less the same job that he is in Europe, but their job is drying up because the governments are like, we are consolidating our forces. We are making it so that if you want to fly around here and you want to do these kinds of jobs, you have to work for the Air Force, which Porco wants no part of.
Yeah, there's like a fairly strong current of camaraderie in the skies. You know, mm-hmm. like no matter what side you're on, you respect the part that we're all out here putting our lives at risk to be in these dumb little seaplanes. Even the pirates, right? Like in that opening scene you're talking about, Alex, after mm-hmm. he kind of gives it to them pretty handily, he offers them to take half the money. Hey, look, I know you got to do repairs and you got to eat. So
I just
like,
fucked your ship up real bad, so
yeah.
I know.
Give me the other half of the money and the kids and we'll call it a day. And, you know, it feels like there's a sense of like, not necessarily looking out for your other pilots, but I think later on it's explicitly stated, the code among seaplane pilots, right?
Yes.
Like this is a hard life. It's a daring life, and you do what you got to do, but you don't break certain rules.
Right. And, you know, those rules are fairly loose, I think, generally. But, you know, the basic gist is, you know, like, treat your fellow pilots with as much respect as you can. And, you know, like, Don't just go around murdering people, more or less.
Mm. Unless you're paid to do it.
Well, even then, yeah, I don't know, like, Porco seems like he doesn't really want to do it even when he has the opportunity, so.
No, but Curtis will.
Curtis will.
Yeah.
I mean, Curtis wants a lot of things. He wants the girl, he wants to be famous, he wants to be a movie star, he wants to be president, he wants to be Ronald Reagan, I think, by and large.
Pretty much.
Yeah. It's hard to root for a guy like that, but, you know. Kurt,
we get introduced to Curtis at the bar. He's the American in the bar, mm-hmm. who is being... who's being offered a job by the Consortium of Pirates, the Federation of Pirates.
Yeah.
They're like,
who are just an amazing rogues gallery of guys with eye patches and Hitler mustaches.
Totally, yes.
I thought the one guy with both was going to figure somewhat prominently, but none of the pirates are really major characters except for the Brad Garrett guy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The lead guy and then the weird old guy who always wants to get out of doing stuff. They're the only ones that have like significant lines.
But there, I think it seems like the pirates are tired of being having their butts slapped by Porco Rosso, and they're going to hire Curtis, the American ace, who did the Kessel Run in 10 parsecs,
yeah,
and is going to take out Porco Rosso. But even in the bar, it seems like they both know what the score is here, and it's no fighting in the bar.
Yeah, we're here to hear the music.
She sure is incredible. I just might have to take her back home with me. I bet she could make it big in America. Although she will have to stop singing in French all the time, of course.
Hey, cowboy, is that your plane out front?
Yep. I don't mind saying she made me a bit of a celebrity in the racing world.
So, you're the one who beat the Italians in the Schneider Cup.
That's right. But what I'm best at is aerial combat. These pirates tell me that you got a pretty good reputation in the skies.
I'd be careful if you plan on making a deal with those pirate gangs. Not only are they lying cheapskates, not a single one of them knows how to bathe.
That's for sure.
Hey, we heard that, you stupid pig!
Oh, look at this. All you handsome pirate bosses at one table. You're not here to cause problems, are you?
Never!
Not us.
You know my rule. You eat in my restaurant, not fight.
Of course, Gina, we would never fight within 50 miles of your place. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We're even getting along with the pig, aren't we? Mm-hmm.
Be good, boys.
Wish me luck.
Really? And you get you also get kind of a setup with Gina and mm-hmm. Porco of, like, they've got a history in the past.
Yeah, it's alluded to early on, but they make it more explicit as the movie goes along that they had a relationship back when Porco was still a dude and not a pig. And they have an ongoing thing where it's like she clearly wants him to just profess his love for her, and he kind of keeps it at arm's length, I think, both because, you know, he's not a man you can tie down or a pig you can tie down. You got to get some rope for that. And also he's scared of hurting this woman who he clearly still loves, but just thinks he's not, his lifestyle, his world is not for
eating
her.
All alone up here again. So... what do you think of that American flyboy? He's something else, isn't he? As soon as he saw me, he asked me to marry him. So I told him of the three pilots I've married. The first died in the war, the second died in the Atlantic, the last one, he died in Asia.
So you've heard something?
I got the call last night. They found his remains in some remote part of Bengal. It's strange, Marco. I've been waiting to hear something for 3 years, but now I can't even cry. I just feel numb. Maybe I've run out of tears.
Yeah, well, the good guys always die. Cheers. To a good man.
Marco, I want to thank you for keeping an eye on me and my restaurant all these years. I just can't tell you how much your friendship means to me.
Well, you know, it's a great place, except for that ugly photograph you keep hanging on the wall up there.
Hey, that's my favorite picture. I can't believe you scribbled over your face. That's the only picture left of you as a human. How are you ever going to break that stupid curse on you, Marco?
Face it. I'm a pig.
Were they ever actually involved?
It seems like they at least were, or at the very least, he was... partnered up or knew someone in his squadron that was in a relationship with her, And they may have had some kind of flirtation or involvement at some point, but it may have been after that guy died.
That it seemed, yeah, it seemed like more, it was like a near miss to me.
Yeah.
That had never actually been stated or whatever, but was always kind of there.
They have that whole childhood friend thing, right?
Because yeah, it seemed like they were all like friends as kids or something like that.
I took it also as like part of whatever we're going to call the him becoming a pig thing of he's just lost all faith in humanity.
Oh,
and just like,
he just wants to live on his beach and fly his plane.
What's the point? I'm not going to get in a relationship. I'm just going to hurt you. Yep. This all ends terribly anyway. It's kind of made explicit two or three times where he's like, that's for humans, not for pigs. Right.
Yeah.
Like he's distanced himself from the world of humans.
Yeah. And this movie loves planes and flying machines. And, you know, like as much as we talk about the seaplane honor system and code and all that, like, I mean, Miyazaki just loves him some damn things that go in the air, like flying apparatuses and machines and planes and all that are a regular feature of many of his films.
Yeah.
The planes are lovely in this.
Looking at his filmography, there's a lot of stuff in the sky.
Mm-hmm. And this movie does, like, a lot of the plane designs are based on real fighter planes from this era.
There's never a date put on this, right?
No, they kind of allude 1930s, which is sort of the you can kind of gather by the fascist Italian government and all that kind of stuff, the rise of all that.
Like maybe mid late 20s.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, there is that one shot, I could see if I can pull it up, of the newspaper, that Italian newspaper, that I wonder if it has a date on it somewhere.
Yeah. But so like Porco's plane, it's named after a real plane called the Savoia S-21, but the design is based on another one called the Mach-E M-33. I believe the word Ghibli is a code name for the Caproni CA-309 light reconnaissance aircraft, which is what they named the company after again.
Oh, it's stamped on the engine.
Yeah, there's an engine. Yes. I thought that was just a goofy reference to their company. I didn't realize.
Yeah, same here.
No, that dude just loves him some airplanes. So like that is what the company is named after.
Huh. Interesting.
But the way they portray that stuff here, like the planes look amazing. The dogfighting sequences are, I think, genuinely some of the best animated stuff I've seen in any movie. Like there is a real sweep and a real grandeur to all of it. It's really well rendered.
Very elegant, like the way light plays off of things at times, you know, is very pronounced.
Yep.
Sheer artistry.
Pure. And the next time the pirates here go after their quarry, they are united as sort of a front, though they are also a bunch of bickering assholes. And then you see Curtis has joined up with them, and he takes out the fighters that have been to come along with this pleasure boat that they are going after.
These poor cannon fodder.
They had no idea what they were gonna. They were
getting, wheeled out of that thing. I was like,
they parachuted. They G.I. Joe parachuted to safety. The newscaster says, they were easily mopped up, but parachuted to safety. I mean, it's that kind of movie, right? Like,
yeah.
Nobody's getting killed.
No, generally not. This is not a very murder-heavy movie by any stretch.
I don't think anybody dies, do they, in the whole movie?
I don't think so. Like, there's some planes that crash and stuff, but like, you never see anyone die.
I mean, the Porco's buddies in the war clearly got shot down, but they ascend on the slipstream of heaven.
They go on a pilot of heaven.
On the contrail to heaven.
Mm-hmm. And this is, so, you know, Porco is, at his current stage, is not really looking for more jobs. I think he's about getting ready to go on vacation when this latest job hits, and his plane is not in the best condition. The engine needs some servicing, but then it's in considerably worse condition after his next dogfight with Curtis. He doesn't fare very well here.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he makes a lot of money from his jobs. I wonder if it's because he's by necessity separated from his usual mechanic that the plane is in such a state.
It seems like he does not like venturing into the real world unless he has to, or if it's just to go to that bar. Like, his general vibe is, I'm on this beach. I'm only here to take the jobs out of here to take the jobs. The rest of my life is meant to be spent here on this beach drinking.
I get it.
Yeah. Like, It's a beautiful beach.
He's got his radio there. And I don't know what he's plugging it into, but he's it's working for him.
I love the bit after Curtis takes him down after his engine or his gun. Is the engine stalls out or his gun? I forget. There's a lot of stalling out of guns and also
first
engines.
I think it's in this where the engines.
And his plane does get shot down, and Curtis's elation at finding a piece of the plane and like, I'm going to take this home to my mom.
Yeah, right, right.
Obnoxious red paint. That's proof. I might just take it back to Texas as a gift for Ma.
I don't know if he actually thinks he's killed him or if it, at very least he thinks that it... I imagine he knows he brought that on the plane. I don't know if he knows he thinks he's dead or not.
Yeah, he at Curtis? Least thinks he's out of the picture.
Yeah,
but I get the sense he thinks he's dead.
Isn't there... Maybe it's not him. That's somebody later in the movie when Porco reemerges. Somebody is like shocked that he's alive and goes like, oh my God, he's alive. Like, I don't know if it's Curtis or not, but
yeah,
somebody definitely thought he died here.
Well, Gina was about to go hunting for him, and then they got a phone call that he's all right. Mm. He's okay. But this necessitates a trip to Milan, which is where I think we're going to take a very quick break and then we're going to come back. All right, we are back, and it's time to visit beautiful Milan.
Yeah, you spend a decent amount of time here. I feel like this is kind of the whole middle act, if not the rest of the
second
movie.
Act.
They just kind of park him there, and he gets to meet a wacky cast of characters, including Piccolo, the mechanic, his daughter, or granddaughter, Fio, and this cadre of women who do all the real work.
You know,
which is another Miyazaki trope that I always enjoy.
Interesting. Okay. My girlfriend loved that part a lot. Maybe we need to watch more Miyazaki.
So my partner did not initially love that part because she's like, what is all this talk about women, like it being weird that women are doing this work or whatever? And it's like, it was 1930s Europe. Like, it's, I understand what they're pulling from here. But, you know, Miyazaki, like in Mononoke, there's that whole village of women who are like working in the... And I don't remember what kind of factory it is, but it's like they're the ones operating a lot of like the machinery in that big village in Mononoke.
Yes, in the mining town. I mean, yeah. I assumed in this, you know, I took that to be revealing of the piggishness of the characters. I mean, who knows what Miyazaki's true beliefs are? I can't say. But
I get the sense that he like has a lot of respect for women and wants them, you know, like sees their treatment of them in a workplace like this as equal, you know,
right.
But like. Other people don't.
I mean, they go into, they talk about how it's post-war and the Depression where, you know, all the men are off. They're all either dead or working somewhere.
This is my niece, Monica.
Nice to meet you.
This is Silvana, my other niece, and her four daughters, Sophia, Laura, Constance, Valentina. Mia's big sister, Giliora. Sandra, she's my cousin, Marietta. Good to see you. My son's wives, Maria, Tina, Anna, and the three old hags showed up.
Porcolino!
Are you girls really still alive?
You bet. We thought we'd get in on the action.
You're not here to help build my plane, are you?
Yeah, we need to get some poker money.
So this is the crew, huh? Don't you have any male relatives?
All the men are gone. They have to look elsewhere for work.
This is work. Get them back.
Women are great. Don't be such a pig. You'll see. They're very hard workers.
Yeah, but we're not baking a cake here.
And, you know, that's what happened in America, right? Where all the men went off to go fight, right? And they didn't allow women in the military. And all the women took the factory jobs and made the war machine happen at home. And it's, you know, it's a very, you know, not the circumstances you want to have to be like, look, women can do these jobs too. But it is, I think it's a reality that happened.
Also, let's be real. He's a pig, literally and figuratively. Yes. He's kind of a pig.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, when he's kind of making, like, I'm just going to say lewd jokes. I don't think he's really being serious here. When he's making lewd jokes about Fio, you know, and Piccolo's like, keep your fucking hands off her, all right? None of that shit. Which he drops fairly quickly once he realizes that Fio, one, that's not cool, and two, oh, by the way, she's really good at designing airplanes. Mm-hmm. He mostly lets that whole thing drop as soon as he realizes, oh, this woman is actually very capable of making my plane better than it was before.
Mm. Good morning. Did you sleep well?
You were up all night?
Here's a rough draft of the design. So what do you think? I tweaked the wing section a bit, which should make the plane fly at least 5 knots faster. Look, I dug up the original blueprint. The design is really radical, huh? Wooden monocoque wings with extreme angles of incidence? I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, they only made one. Then they decided it was too dangerous. No pilot could fly it. I found it covered in dust in a warehouse.
Well, I can see why. With the wings angled like that, I'm really surprised you can even get it off the water.
Takeoffs and landings can be a little bit tricky, but get her up to speed and she handles like a dream. Why don't you try increasing the angle of incidence by half a degree on the wing? The rest looks fine.
So you're giving me the job? Oh, thank you for trusting a woman.
All right, you've got the job. But on one condition, Fio. No more staying up all night or your work will start getting sloppy. Also, it's really bad for your complexion.
You got it. To be honest, I couldn't sleep last night because I was afraid you wouldn't give me the job. I should sleep fine tonight. I'll go make us some coffee and then I'll get back to work. This is so exciting! I can't wait to start building.
Don't tell me that she plans on building the whole plane by herself.
She's awesome. She's like super excited, very talented. I'm not sure how old she's supposed to be here.
She's supposed to be
like
17.
17? Okay.
Yeah. And she's just come back from the States. They don't really say doing what, but she's back with a vigor for designing airplanes, and she is very anxious to turn Porco's plane into a state-of-the-art flying machine.
I do like, what is it, when he's Piccolo is giving the Grace, and they're like, mm-hmm. Thanks for all the food, and like, God, just forgive us for having a woman's hands build a war machine, and,
yeah.
Fio gives like that wink to, to him, like, uh-huh, just go along with it.
Was that there? There's also a line from Piccolo in there about I can't remember what brings it about. Somebody asks him a question, but it's something about war profiteers and bounty hunters.
Oh, mm-hmm. No, that's the other guy. That's not Piccolo. That's when he's buying the gun. When he's buying the gun from the old guy and the kid, right? Earlier before Milan, I think it is when he's getting the guns and the little kid asks him like, "What's the difference between whatever."
So, what's the difference between fighting a war and bounty hunting?
If you make money from war, you're scum. But if you can't make money from bounty hunting, you're an idiot.
Oh, interesting. That's another thing I didn't even consider is that, of course, I got a very different translation. If you were using the more literal Japanese subtitles,
mm-hmm.
then I got a somewhat different line there, now that I think about it.
I think I got was like, if you make money during a war, you're a scoundrel or something. If you don't make money as a bounty hunter, you're bad at your job.
That was the one, yes.
So yeah, the translations are slightly different between the audio tracks, but I will say that reading both subtitles files as I was putting stuff together for us, they're not that different. Mm. It's more embellishments than it is anything else.
Yeah.
But I love this whole sequence, like the building of the plane, the fucking, you know, the Italian nonas, like just hanging out there doing their thing, getting all excited about the espionage and fucking subterfuge they're doing. Because while he's in Milan, the Air Force comes knocking because he's not supposed to be there.
Right.
Yeah. It seems like a friend of his from the service.
Yeah.
Back in the day, who has risen in the Italian Air Force. And is kind of his man on the inside, but only to a degree.
Yep.
That's such a, like, I know it's not cold. It makes me think of Cold War intrigue, but obviously it works in any kind of wartime or repressive situation. But the nonchalantly strolling into a theater and sitting down next to somebody and not turning to face them, but having a very quiet, subtle conversation to warn them about something is like some top tier, like spy intrigue type stuff.
Oh, especially in a fairly empty theater, right? Like where
it's like a couple dozen people at most.
Yeah, there are a lot of empty seats, and the one person sits next to you and just looks straight ahead and starts talking to you.
Ferrari, look at you. You're a major now.
Marco, you're crazy. What are you doing back in Italy?
I make it a rule to come and go as I please.
The secret police already know you're in the country. Were you followed?
Yeah, I gave them the slip.
You've got to get out of Italy now. I've seen your arrest warrant, deserting the Italian Air Force, entering the country illegally, being a blatantly unpatriotic pig. This is no time to laugh, Marco. They've got it in for you. They want to confiscate your plane.
Man, this movie stinks.
Marco, why don't you come back to the Air Force? I've got influence now. I could work something out.
Thanks for the offer, but I'd rather be a pig than a fascist.
Then you better keep your plane out of the skies. The only way the Italians will let you fly is if you fly for our country.
I only fly for myself.
You really are a pig, aren't you? You realize if they catch a pig, they won't give him a fair trial.
I understand. Thanks, Rari. Give my regards to the guys.
This movie's really great. All right, I'll try to look out for you, but I can only do so much.
Sure.
Well, so long, friend.
I love the movie they're watching, which is, you know, a nod to like old, you know, kind of Disney style animation of the 20s and 30s. Like it is, you know, it's just a very cute little thing that they're watching, though Porco hates it. But this is where you get the line after he gives him the offer of like, you should come back to the Air Force, man. There's still room for you. I can get you in. It's like better a pig than a fascist, which is, I would say, a line that echoes through my head a lot these days.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, so like he's being followed. Like the secret police are out there looking for him. You know, this guy can only do so much. So he's got to get that plane in the air as soon as humanly possible, because the longer he stays, the worse it's going to be for him. And he needs Fio, even though he doesn't want her, he needs Fio to come with him on the first flight, because there ain't no time to test this shit.
No time to test. She really wants to test. Also, she really wants to go.
Yeah.
What's the deal about the, what, there's a bit about a gun, like there's not room for a second gun because she's in there or something like that. Is that right?
So she builds a little compartment for herself to sit in the front of the plane. And I guess the gun that is on the right side had to be moved or readjusted so that she could fit her body in there.
Fio, this is way too dangerous. I'll be taking off from the canal out back. I don't even know if I can get her off the water.
Uh-huh. I know. That's why you need to have the engineer with you, so I can make adjustments to the plane.
Don't you get it? I'm off to fight Curtis. I will have bullets flying over my head.
I can handle that. I'm responsible for this plane, and I want to do my first job right.
Think about it. I'm a known womanizer. I'd live on a deserted island in a small tent.
That's great. I love camping.
That's not the point.
Take her. I'll give you a good deal on her salary, and I know she'll come in handy. Besides, I want you back in business so I can get paid.
You're this girl's grandfather?
It'll be good for her. And I'll install this so you two can chit-chat.
So you're okay with turning her into an outlaw?
Mm-mm. I'm going along as your hostage. See, that way all my relatives can tell the police they had no choice but to help you. So please, Porco, let me come. I can help you.
You better take out one of those machine guns.
What?
There's not enough space in there, even with your tiny butt. Now take out a gun.
Thank you! And you know, my butt is bigger than it looks. I'll have the gun out in 2 seconds.
You know, he doesn't want a partner. He doesn't want someone with him, least of all a teenage girl going with him, both because he's a pig and also because he works alone.
Yeah, it's unclear if it's because he's annoyed and thinks she'll just like slow him down and get in the way, or is he actually concerned about her safety at all? It's kind of hard to tell if he is or not.
He plays everything very coolly, so it's hard to really tell what his, you know, his actual thinking is, but I think it's a mixture of both.
Yeah,
you know, what he says is partially true.
Yeah, like this is baggage. Also, like mostly it's a responsibility I don't need. Like,
yeah. But she doesn't care. Like, this is her plane. This is the first plane she's ever built. And she's like, I'm not going to let you take this into the field without having someone there to adjust and fix stuff as needed. And they also, I think she just wants to get out of Milan.
Yeah, it does seem like she wants to get out of Milan. And they do kind of subtly say, not subtly, kind of explicitly, but kind of quickly say the design of this plane is out of this world. Like, what an experimental design. It's amazing. Nobody could really pilot this thing the way it's built. So it's like the perfect match of experimental plane and just this pilot who can't. Needs something that's so outside. And Fio, I think when she's trying to get the job too, does the thing of like, look, you recognize that there's inherent talent versus experience, right?
Yeah.
And give me a chance. I've got the talent. I don't have the experience, but give me a chance.
Yeah, like they flat out say, like, he was an amazing pilot from day one. He didn't need training.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And as if to drive home. Yes, that whole thing. I like the idea that this plane is very hard to get off the water, but then once you get it into the sky, it's like the best of the best.
Yep. Yeah.
But you have to be very good to get it there in the first place.
Yeah, they say takeoffs and landings are the hard part.
Again, makes me want to have this in Flight Simulator. I want to try and see if I could get his plane off the river.
There's also the shot at the end of the sequence of them trying to like. They're not full. What do you call it? They're not flying. They're on the water, but they're sailing through the canals at high speed. Yes, trying to get the thing airborne.
This whole sequence is amazing.
When they finally get through that and leave the city, and the next shot of them just flying into the sunset is like mind blowing. That painting, like if you don't look at it too closely, if you look at the plane and not the painting, it kind of looks like a photograph.
Mm. Yeah,
it looks like something out of an airline commercial. Like, just some really incredible visuals in this. Like
perhaps a Japan Airlines commercial.
Yes, sure. But still, just like, man, like, so much of this movie just looks so good.
I don't mean to divert too much. The thing I was going to ask real quick, Vinny, is, like, do they have a lot of classic planes in Flight Simulator? Like World War One fighter
they
type
do.
Stuff?
They do. Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't been back in there in a while, but they have marketplaces where you can just put planes in and model them, and they have, like, you know, Mustangs and stuff like that, and seaplanes and things of that, experimental planes. So, yeah.
So I mean, wonder if they might actually be in there. Have this model in there somewhere, because, again, the design of this plane, while loosely based on a couple of planes, does mostly look like one. So it might be in there somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, look, it might be they even might have this in there, and I just never saw it.
Yeah.
They do throw out the name that you listed earlier, at least in the dub.
Yeah.
Like the S-21 something?
The Savoia S-21 is the one it's named after, but the Mach-E M-33 is the one that it's actually designed on.
Oh, I see. Okay. Fio throws that name out when the pirates are all trying to bust it up in the cove later. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just found a thing. I just did a Google search, and the first thing that came up was added Porco Rosso Savio S-21 into Flight Simulator.
Fan-fucking-tastic.
Oh, it looks so good.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it looks, it's got like cartoon sheet rendering on it, too. It is very good.
Because, now once they're in the air, I really, like, I kind of love just everything that happens in succession from here. Like, this is, I like a lot of this movie, but I feel like the back third is maybe my favorite, both in terms of, like, really amazing looking sequences, and also just the fact that, like, it doesn't really have a climax the way that you would think it would.
Yeah.
It's not about, like, him going after the fascists or, you know, like, really getting into anything beyond the scope of these pirates who are just hassling him and just kind of creating some kind of conclusion around that. Because, yes, when they do eventually arrive back at his island cove, the pirates are there waiting for him.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a plan?
It's like...
Is it a good plan? Maybe not, but it is a plan.
They really don't know. They're like a little like dog that caught the car. It seems like they really don't know quite what to do.
They knew they were going to jump him. They didn't know what they were going to do after.
And it's really Fio that kind of upsets the entire balance here.
Yeah.
Because she's not having any of it.
Well, we know they're not averse to kidnapping, you know, girls and children when it, you know, serves their hostage-taking needs. But, it also seems like a stern word is really all you need to get these guys to back down because they're fucking dopes.
Well, yes, but also I feel like her resoluteness, like not anybody could do it.
Hey, what do you say we smash this stupid red plane to bits and leave him here to rot in debt?
Smash it? You destroy a work of art?
It happens to be a one-of-a-kind Savoy S-21.
We realize it's a nice plane, but we have our reasons.
Yeah? What are they?
Well, it's kind of complicated.
You call yourselves seaplane pilots? Step aside. Watch the shoes. My grandpa has been telling me stories about seaplane pilots ever since I was born. He always says that seaplane pilots are the most honorable and trustworthy fighters in the world. Every time they fly, both the ocean and the sky purify their hearts. So they're braver than any pilot in the sky. And they are mightier than any sailor in the sea.
Miss Theo, thank you. You make me proud to be a seaplane pilot.
And you should be. I can tell you're not about money or revenge. You're about honor.
That's right, Theo!
Yeah! To honor!
Now that girl is something else.
I was going to mention this earlier. She is... Trying to think. I don't want to say she's an unrealistic character, but she's so unflappable. You know what I mean?
Like, she's a Spitfire is what she is.
She is so unfazed by literally anything that's like it's almost like superhuman level of influence and charisma on other people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course, also, it's actually Gina does the same thing in the restaurant to these guys. So, you know, maybe it's just a broader theme than this one character, you know, mm-hmm. but like there's something about her specific brand of spunk that I feel like is just very commanding.
I mean, she just demolishes them instantly. Like yeah. There's like 20 dudes here, all have guns, and she just starts yelling at them. They're just like, oh God, she's right.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't hurt that, you know, he says like, hey, she's a genius. Like,
yeah,
she's like one of the best airplane engineers out there.
Well, and you know, like the pandering to the sense of pride of seaplane pilots where mm-hmm. I was told you were all the pride of the seaplane pilot and you all look out and there's a code and this, that, and the other thing. And like, you know, they're all kind of either softies or they believe it themselves. You know, they want to live to a higher code.
Yeah.
It's just tough out there. But either way, they feel like they should be acting to some higher standard, and that higher standard is a more organized fight, a death
yes.
for Porco Rosso.
And the fighter in this case is Curtis, who wants to finish him off once and for all, who doesn't make an appearance here. And then a wager is made that, you know, look, I mean, I'm going to say wagering a child bride is maybe not the way I would go with things, but it was a different time.
Look, Porco didn't do it.
No.
And he was against it.
Yes. Well, he's just mad that, like, Gina doesn't love him.
Curtis is not a good guy, necessarily. Also, yeah, we should mention before we get toward the end that there is that scene where Curtis shows up in the garden with Gina and makes his overtures toward her.
Yeah.
Which are very roundly rejected.
What?
What's so funny? I'm serious. Don't you want to be the first lady? Gina?
I find your humility very charming.
So you'll come with me?
No, I can't. I have a long-standing bet going here. I bet myself that if a certain man comes to visit me when I'm out here in my garden, then the two of us will fall in love. But that fool only comes to my restaurant at night. He never stops and shows his face in the daylight.
In, like, not even a mean way, but in the most casually dismissive way possible. Of like, you know, it's nice that you're doing this, but I have this bet going that this pig is going to say he loves me, and that's more interesting to me than loving you.
Yeah, right, yes.
Not in that many words, but yeah. In so many words.
Like, yeah, this isn't really on the table for you.
To be fair, His attempt at wooing her is to say, hey, I'm going to be a movie star soon, and also the president.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, you could be first lady.
Like, yeah, sure, man.
Yeah.
I forget what she says something to. I can't remember the line, but it's like, life's a little different here, man. It's like not what we're, it's not like
something
what I'm
you,
after.
You fall in love all the time. It's different here. Yeah. Something like that.
But yes, he is the, he becomes kind of the foil nemesis, the reason for the season here with Porco mm-hmm. Rosso towards the middle of the movie and then the end here as we get into our climax. He's got his whole plane. He's got his crew.
But again, Curtis, he is the villain of the story, but he is not like a hard charging villain the way you would maybe see in a lot of other movies like this. He's just kind of a dirtbag who has some untoward ends that he wants to, you know, he wants to reach, but like, he's not the worst person in the world. He just kind of sucks.
I mean, would he have killed Porco if he had the chance?
I think in a blind rage, yes, but I also think he would have felt bad about it afterward.
Yeah, okay, fair.
That's what I think.
It's weird for how many guns and heavy weapons there are in this movie that, like, nobody seems to actually want to shoot or kill anyone.
Yeah.
He's, like, got the vibe. It's a little like a dilettante vibe of, like, you know, he's, like, rich, but he's, like, I fly because it's the thing that to do, right? Like, I'm good at it, and I've got a lot of money.
He's like a Lindbergh type, sort of.
Yes, but, like, seems very blue blood.
Yeah, like I could do anything. I'm fairly good at this, but I could also maybe give this up if this weren't the thing. I really want to be an actor. I really want to be whatever. Like,
he wants to be whatever make him the most famous and popular thing will be.
Whereas the rest of these sea dogs feel like it's their life, right? This is in their blood.
I mean, most of all, Porco, because he doesn't want anything that isn't just his idyllic life and flying.
Right.
And this is the one moment where, you know, like, I think this is the most revealing scene here, which is the nighttime on the beach where Fio briefly sees, whether it's a half-imagined vision or whether this is something you can actually see if maybe you get close enough to this person and can see his true form or whatever. But she gets a brief glimpse of what he looked like as a person, as opposed to as a pig. And in this conversation, he tells the story about, you know, his final days in the war and, you know, seeing a bunch of his buddies die and the vision he had while he was passed out in his plane, which was basically flying him itself while he was unconscious. And this is, again, in a movie that has at least a half dozen scenes I will call just straight up gorgeous, this one is really something.
So it's really affecting, like that last bit of the scene of just the planes ascending and then the whole river of presumably deceased pilots in the sky kind of thing. It just is really somber, like a touching kind of image.
It's the quiet of it for me that really does it for me. Yeah. Like there's a little bit of music and a little bit of twinkling kind of in the background, but like, you don't hear the plane engines, you don't really see, and no one talks other than, you know, Porco's human version, like, kind of yelling out to them, crying out to them, saying, take me instead of them.
Yeah, and the way it's all framed from below, where they're all ascending away from you, you know, as if to never be seen again.
Off into their, you know, their chemtrail in the sky.
It's a lot of planes.
When I came to, I was skimming just above the sea, all alone.
God was telling you it wasn't your time yet.
You think? Seems to me he was telling me I was a pig and maybe I deserved to be all alone.
You can't believe that! You're a good person!
No, the good guys were the ones who died. Or maybe I'm dead and life as a pig is the same thing as hell. Not good asleep. That stupid kid. He sold me rusted cartridges.
I think you're a great human being, Porco. And I'm glad you're still around. Mwah! Good night!
You know, and he thinks he's just kind of, you know, it sounds like there's a bit of survivor's guilt for having made it back when I think he says something like all the good guys died.
Yeah.
I
only the pigs, basically, were left.
Yes, exactly. And like, you know, she does, she's like, maybe if I kiss you, you'll turn into a human. She's like, save it for someone who deserves it.
Yeah, save it for the person who deserves it.
Yeah. I think that flicker of him that she sees is maybe him regaining some humanity back.
Mm-hmm. Like maybe he's starting to in quiet moments of reflection, he's maybe starting to revert back to his old self.
Yeah. I don't know.
But yeah, I think a big part of him cursing himself to be a pig is that survivor's guilt. It's the idea of, you know, I'm what's left, and right. I don't feel like I'm deserving, and I don't feel like the people that are here still are deserving of that second chance.
Right, yes.
And then it's basically a mad dash to the showdown.
This strange finale.
It is a little strange. Like, in what context do you mean that, Brad?
Well, the ending is definitely not what I was expecting, and how I don't think it's vague in the sense that they don't. I think they make it clear what happens at the end.
Yes.
I shouldn't, and also I'm skipping ahead. I didn't mean to actually talk about the last 3 minutes.
No, that's
here
fine.
Necessarily. That's kind of mainly what I was getting at, though, and how implied everything is toward the end.
Yeah.
But also the showdown in the sky is kind of fitting in what you want. I think it's the protracted just beating each other to a pulp after that, though, is the part where I was like, okay, where is this going? This is especially the way they end up looking toward the end.
Oh man, it's
this
something.
Is not how I expected this to play out.
It's very something Metal Gear-ish about it.
Yes, in terms of how long suffering, you know what I mean? They just keep going and going and going when clearly way beyond any point of reason.
Because they do start out with the dogfight, and they, there's a whole rule here, a series of rules that have to be announced. There's a bunch of pirate folk and rich folk and all the people who have descended on this island, which is a great visual of all the boats, and then all of those leaving later on when they have to get the fuck out of there. Kind of love just a whole setup for this stuff. And then, yeah, they get in the air, and it's very clear that Curtis wants to fucking kill him. Porco ain't gonna do that. He wants to take out his engines and his guns and win that way without having to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And so this drags on because he won't actually take the kill shot.
Just kind of wears him down until he's out of ammo and everything.
But then both their guns jam. And again, I love a lot of the sequences here where they just keep sweeping the planes directly over people's heads and fucking knocking over towers and other stuff because they have no consciousness of anything other than the fight they are in. And then they eventually, they land the damn planes and they just get out and start beating the living shit out of one another.
It's kind of gross.
It's amazing.
The state of their faces after a couple minutes.
They somehow pull a boxing ref out of nowhere and they just throw him in the middle of it. It's like, all right, we got rounds now. We're doing this for real.
I think that's one of the pirates, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. The they just put him in a little bow tie.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, you're totally right. The pacing of this is slightly bizarre, but I think in kind of an amazing way. And they don't waste time in showing you just how badly these guys are just wailing on one another. Like the bruises and missing teeth and all of that is just so out of pocket. And I love it.
Yeah, it's weird because it's animation. It's highly stylized. It shouldn't be disturbing, but it's kind of unpleasant to look at for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because they're so fucked up, and they won't stop.
Can't stop.
No.
And the quote unquote police are on their way.
Yeah. The setup is that Angina is also racing to try to warn them that the fascists are coming.
Though it's not even much of a race because she gets the heads up, and then she's like, "Oh, cool, we beat them." That's kind of it. There's not really that much of a time pressure.
Yeah,
it.
Sure. I think there's maybe one line of just, we've got to get there before they do or something.
The thing I have found with Ghibli movies, by and large, and especially the Miyazaki ones, is that they either have an incredibly intense central conflict or they have almost no conflict. And there is a conflict in this movie, and it's mostly just between Porco and Curtis, but the Air Force barely matters. They're just kind of there as a looming threat and just kind of to hurry the plot along. The way everything kind of wraps up here, it just kind of wraps up. Not a thing where it's anyone has to beat or kill another person in order for things to get back to normal or whatever. It's really just they're just doing this so they can move on. That's all this really is Porco needs this to move on to whatever the next stage of his life is. And Curtis needs this because he needs to get over this revenge bullshit. So he can move on to whatever the next thing is for him. Because their lifestyle is ending.
Almost feels like kind of a character study in a way of here's this guy who has experienced a lot of loss and guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what it's done to his view of the world, and he needs to have new exposure to some good pure humanity to remember who he is and
because it's been the dregs for so long.
Right. He's become kind of a scumbag but he's not really deep down.
Yeah.
And I think it's during the fight, right, that even Curtis is like, Gina loves you, man. Do you even get it?
Are you that fucking stupid?
You feel like in typical Disney movie, Curtis would be super mad that he was bested and and the stakes would turn deadly, right?
That's exactly what I was kind of waiting to happen, right? Like a knife to come out.
Right, like even Curtis has the humanity to say, like, okay, yeah, she loves you, not me.
Right.
Like, fucking wake up, man. Come on.
Like, deep down, he wants to beat him because he wants to be the best, but also, like, he also knows that in the end, he's not really a competition for him in most things, you know, least of all Gina, but also, like, as a pilot, like, they're comparable, but I think he realizes it's the pig's got me on this one.
Yes. And also, like, flying is Porco's whole life where, like, you know, Curtis turns right around and does go and become a movie star.
Yeah, it's a dalliance for him.
Yeah.
And he does, you're right. In the epilogue here, you know, we find out that Curtis got at least part of his wish. I mean, he's not president yet, but he will be someday.
Not yet.
The last shot, I will say, of this fight, though, like, the final punch, where they're, like, Porto looks like he is straight up separating that dude's neck from his body in that,
that
shot.
That uppercut?
Yeah. It is really something, but, yeah. You know... Porco literally wins by a hair's breadth, but, like, does it matter? Does the win matter?
Porco just drowns less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The shots also of, like, the water pouring out of their faces as they keep getting knocked down into the ocean is great.
Out of a snout.
And, yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, he's not ready to just tell Gina he loves her and marry her or whatever, but, like, I think he knows that it's time to move on with his life. Fio needs to move on with her life and start her life, really. And probably being a permanent mechanic for the pig is not the way to do that. So everyone kind of goes their separate ways.
Well, okay, you're skipping a major part here.
Yeah.
Which is...
Wait, the part.
Right? Which is the part where Fio steals a kiss.
Yes.
Right? And then... it's Curtis, right? Who's like, your face, man!
Yeah.
And they, but they don't show it. They just kind of show Porco running or walking into the distance.
Here come the Italian Air Force.
I'm going to draw them away from the others. You want to help?
Sure. Hey, your face! Wait! Wait up! Turn around! Get away from me! Come on, let me see.
And so you're never really quite sure. I mean, you're...
Is he cured, or was it a momentary thing?
Yeah, you could assume, but, like, right. And that's kind of the big reveal. Like, did he get his humanity back? Did he find his way? I mean, even the movie explicitly sets it up because it's Fio in the epilogue, right? Like,
yeah.
Did they wind up? That's our secret. Like, we're not going to tell.
I kind of think of it as this, like, sort of the Hobbes rule from Calvin and Hobbes of, like, is he a real tiger? Is he not?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't matter, right?
Doesn't matter.
It's not really relevant to what's being communicated here. It's kind of the same thing here. Everybody obviously is going to have a belief. Did he not? Like, I personally feel like, yes, he changed back because it's emblematic of his rediscovery of his humanity, right?
Yeah.
It's like, this is the effect that Fio has had on him and this rivalry and... His like you said, his lifestyle is about to go away, and just all these things coming together. You know, he's like kind of reassessed his view on the world and his relationship with Gina and everything.
And I think that's right, because the movie itself is not particularly invested in the mechanics or the reality of him being a pigman.
Right.
Like, the curse is such a tossed off reference that is not ever really explained in any great detail, because in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter whether it's a metaphor or it's literal. The notion here is the man is a pig because he believes he's a pig. That's it. That's all there is to it. And, you know, I think you're right. I think that, you know, with rediscovering through Fio and through, you know, kind of the reality of having to sort of shift his goals in life, he realizes that, like, maybe something's different now. Maybe I'm not the way I was then.
Yeah. Or there's like, there is something to fight and live for. And maybe it's, you know, other people, and I could still be useful, and I'm not surviving wasn't a mistake, right? There's a purpose here, which, you know,
there's a value
to my life, right? Exactly. Which, you know, during the fight he seems like he is a person fighting with nothing to lose, and then maybe he does have something to lose.
Yeah,
so it's good, it's well done, it's subtle. I like how they handle it,
especially how coy she is in the narration at the end.
Yes.
In particular.
Well, so that's the thing, is that she's very coy about it. Like, she talks about where everyone kind of ended up and, you know, what her life was and how she kind of, you know, made a life for herself.
Porco flew rings around the Italian Air Force, and they never caught up with him again. I stayed with Gina for a while, and we became good friends. But soon I decided it was time to go back to Milan. Through the years, there have been a few wars and a good deal of turmoil, but my friendship with Gina has remained strong. I am now president of the Piccolo Company, and we're busy designing all sorts of radical new planes, but I take time out every summer to visit the Hotel Adriano. The old pirate gang still hang out at Gina's bar.
Mr. Curtis still writes to me sometimes, although he has yet to become president of the United States. He says he still fondly remembers that summer in the Adriatic.
And as for how Gina's bet turned out, well, that's our secret.
But you do see his plane parked on the island in that last shot.
Do you?
When they're scanning over, I think the island that is the one Gina lives on.
Oh, I
think
that.
The plane is parked in the port.
Huh, okay.
Yeah, it's like parked at her house.
Yeah.
But and like, you know, she says, at least in the subtitles I read, I never saw Porco Rosso again. It doesn't mean that she didn't see the actual person. Yeah, Marco, right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
The original guy. So right. who can say?
I see the plane now. That's like a fairly quick pan over the island.
Yeah, it's very quick.
And you're kind of looking at Fio's new plane there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite subtle, as most of the stuff is.
Like, and then, you know, after the credits, you do see him flying around a little bit, but you don't know really when or where that was. But, you know, the sense is that, hey, he's still out there. He's still living his life in one way or another.
Yeah, I'm looking at this last shot of the garden. There's really no tell there at all.
No.
I don't know. The implication seems quite clear to me, although, of course, it's open to interpretation.
Yeah, I think that those crazy kids got together in some way or another, and I'm going to say that it was because he eventually found his humanity again.
And we never saw the pig again.
Never saw the pig again.
Just the man.
Just the man.
Also, I just have to mention this amazing old pirate's home shot.
Yes.
Like, all of the sky pirates are there, except way older now.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good.
Do you know, Alex? During the credits, they have these illustrations. Would look like Depression era illustrations where the people are all pigs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they from something else? Or are they made for this?
I don't know off the top of my head. They definitely look like they could be referencing old timey photos and just sort of drawing over them. You know, in their universe. But I don't know if they are referencing very specific photos or not.
Okay, I wasn't also sure. The only reason I mentioned it now, that's what I thought initially, but then when you mentioned that this work was made for something else originally and had other ideas originally, maybe I thought they were original sketches from maybe a manga or something else.
Yeah, no, I think, as far as I know, I don't know what the exact origin of that stuff is.
Okay.
Take it with a grain of salt, because it's a Tumblr post, so not necessarily authoritative, but this Ghibli... like fan Tumblr says they are Miyazaki sketches.
Okay. Stuff he did just for maybe for this.
Maybe it's just like initial sketches of like, this is what this universe is going to look like.
Yeah.
Look, yeah.
Are we all pigs?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. We all are to some degree.
War makes pigs of us all.
Mm-hmm. That Black Sabbath wrote a song about it. So that's Porco Rosso, folks. How you guys feel about it?
Yeah, that was great. That was excellent. I don't know what I expected. Right, or what I mean is I don't know why I would have expected otherwise, because I've liked everything I've seen from them.
Yeah. But I think even among their pantheon of films, I think this is one of their best.
There's like a real charm to it. There's a warmth to it that I really like, aside from just the lovely visuals and kind of, you know, it all kind of coalesces into this very period piece charming thing that I do want to watch. I didn't watch it with the kids, but I would watch it with them. It's just, like you said, it tells a really personal story without having a lot of the tropes that and kind of pitfalls of those like saccharine ones of like, Curtis doesn't pull out a knife at the end. It doesn't turn into this, you know, we got to get rid of the villain. Who is the villain? You know, the characters are interesting and personal and small enough in scale with this bigger backdrop happening.
Totally. There's just, I don't know, like I agree with Miyazaki in the sense that I do feel like this is a more adult story than maybe, you know, like other animated films of this era generally tended to be. But it still feels like the kind of thing that if I had seen it as a kid, I still would have loved it. You know, like there, it has that sense of adventure. It has really amazing, you know, sometimes cute, but also just really, you know, kind of gobsmacking art to it. I love the soundtrack by Joe Hisaishi. Like, it's everything about it still, I think, feels very like digestible by someone who is younger, even though it is about war and it is about, you know, it's also one of the best examples, I would say, of any. I know Japan loves old world Europe, but I feel like it's one of the best renderings I've ever seen in a Japanese animated film of that kind of that environment, of that era, in a way that doesn't just feel fetishistic. It feels like it is, it has a real, like you said, a warmth and a real feeling toward that kind of that environment, that era.
It's definitely romanticized, but with, yeah, a little, with some of an edge of, no, but this is also deadly. Like,
yes,
like acknowledging that, like, hey,
it is,
man,
wartime, you know, even, yeah, though it is technically post-war, it is in the build-up to another one.
There's a real, like, slap back into reality every time someone says fascist, right? And you're like, yep, oh, right, yes, no, they recognize that this is going to be bad,
yeah,
and lives are at stake, but there's a real, it's got that vibe of, like, stiff upper lip kind of thing of just, like, you know, we're here to do our jobs and people are going to die, kind of, but that's the romantic part of it, right? Like,
right.
You fight the good fight and, you know, but even the pirates are, like, taking kids on their ships and, you know, like.
The kids don't seem to mind.
There's, like, a real.
Most exciting thing that's happened to them in a while.
Yeah, right, right. The vibe of it is just, again, it's charming.
Yeah.
There's a charm to the whole thing.
There is frivolity to it, but there is also, it blends that in the seriousness, I think, really well.
Yeah, like it does it without throwing the stakes away,
right,
of the whole thing.
Well, because it manages its stakes really well, I think. Like, it doesn't create, you know, outlandish stakes that are impossible to come back around on without diving into those tropes you talked about and, yeah, turning it into a very standard adventure story. Like, I think by keeping it smaller and keeping it more focused on this region and these people, that helps a lot.
There's also just something cool about all these vehicles and planes, these,
yeah,
seaplanes, like, especially when the sky pirates are all getting ready to attack that ship and you see all their planes, their weird, you
polka
know,
dot planes, and the one, yeah, with the yeah, bat bolted on tail.
It really does have a bit of a Tailspin vibe. Or I should, yeah, probably, yeah, say, sure, when did this come out? This is
1992.
Okay. So this probably predates Tailspin by a few years. You know, that's a lot of pirates and seaplanes and coves, yeah, and smuggling happening there too.
Like, there's also just a, I lost the word I was going to use to describe it, but there's just, like, an immense number of hours, it looks like, in some of the, like, the dogfight sequences and stuff. Like, mm-hmm, just the degree of animation, the complexity of it that's happening. Like, you know, there's plenty of, like, really nice, lavish, like, Golden Age Disney, mm-hmm, hand animation stuff out there, too. But, like, I'm trying to think how to describe, you know, like, so much of what you would see in a frame is static, you know, with just a couple of characters animating, you know what I mean, in a lot,
yeah,
of cases. Like, everything is moving on the screen, you know? Like, you have animated this and both of these aircraft up close from all kinds of different angles as they tumble and somersault around, you know what I mean? It's just, like, there's just more craft in what I'm looking at, I feel like, than in a lot of other animation I've seen. Like, there's just so much effort in it.
Yeah. And that's the thing I always come away from with the Ghibli stuff, is that, like, they don't half-ass stuff in just about any context.
Enjoyable.
Where's, yeah, this one ranked for you? We haven't done this in a
while.
Oh,
my,
so,
gosh.
Remember the ranking?
Oh, yeah, I guess.
I'm going to tell you right now, this is in the top five of things we have watched for this podcast for me, but I don't have it in me to, like, put a specific thing on it. It is just one of my favorite movies that we've done yet.
Yeah, yeah. I boy, where does it rank for me? That's a really hard one, because
I haven't looked at your list in a while.
A, I haven't looked at the list in a while, and B, it's just out there. This is probably going to be in the middle for me.
Okay.
Let's see. I'm just scanning my list now. You know, actually, I'm going to put this near the top. No, top third. So
top
I'm going to say.
Okay. Yeah, just make a completely arbitrary spot for it. That's
right.
What we come here for.
I'm just going to quickly say it's between... this is going to make sense to everybody. It's going between Demolition Man and,
uh-huh,
They Live.
Okay.
That is near the top of this list. I'd say that's top 25% of this list.
High praise, man. High praise.
Yeah, you know, it's got universal appeal. It's one of those movies I feel like you don't need a caveat to recommend.
Totally.
Right? Which, like, I feel like sometimes as you get towards the top of this list, you might be like, hey, do you like the suspense movies or action movies or whatever? I feel like there's a universal appeal to it, even though, and maybe if you don't like pigs, I don't know.
Do you like cool art?
Yeah.
Do you like adventure? Here you go. That's all you need.
Also, there's a lot of Italian in it, which is fun.
Yeah. And respectful Italian.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, they're all eating spaghetti and meatballs at the table there.
Just like you do every day.
Just like, honestly, just like we do almost every day.
Yeah.
Whether it's a cliche or reality, who am I to say? I have spaghetti sitting in the fridge right now.
Hey, spaghetti's delicious. No one would fault you.
So are meatballs.
Well, that is going to put a cap on the anime experience for the Nextlander Watchcast for the moment. We'll probably revisit this stuff sooner rather than later, because that strike does not look like it's going to end anytime soon. And so for the rest of this month, we have a slightly different schedule than usual. Next week, there's no show, because we are on break.
Mm-hmm.
We are taking a week off, which means that there will be no show. We're just going to... Usually, we tried to slot one in, but we actually planned this one ahead of time enough so we could say, we're taking this week off. So that's happening. The final 2 weeks of this month will be occupied by a pair of Hong Kong action films, because I know, Brad, you were very excited to check out more of this stuff. And I was too, honestly, so I feel like this is as good an opportunity as any. And we are going to watch a pair of films over the final 2 weeks of this month, starring some of the co-stars from the Michelle Yeoh month, in Cynthia Rothrock and Chow Yun-Fat.
Great.
So, first up will be, another Cynthia Rothrock film. I think the other really amazing one from her Hong Kong run. She's had some other good ones, but like I feel like this is the other one I would point to be like, this is the one you should see to see what this woman can do in Righting Wrongs,
okay.
Which is, I've not seen it in a little while, but has another couple of some of my favorite fights from this era of Hong Kong action cinema. So I'm very excited to show you guys that one. And then we are going to close out the month with, I'm going to call it, The Mother of all action films from the Hong Kong region.
Dang.
John Woo's Hard Boiled.
Okay. Wow, that's I'm excited.
My man, let me tell you, without telling you, this is maybe the coolest Chow Yun-Fat has ever been.
Okay.
There are two or three sequences in this movie that I will call some of the best action I've ever seen, and it has all the John Woo-isms in it. All of them.
Other doves.
Anything John Woo does on the regular, he does here.
Okay, great. I can't wait.
Doves.
Okay, doves.
Doves.
Double guns, jumping in slow motion.
Double guns. Okay. Slow motion jumping, double guns. Yes.
Okay, great. Okay.
Jazz.
Okay. Double guns, and the clips come out of the guns while they're
yeah,
shooting.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure okay. that happens. So. Okay.
All right, great. All right.
Yeah, this is a hell of a movie, and I'm actually kind of surprised neither of you have seen it before, and I'm very excited that you have not seen it before.
Great, can't wait.
I don't want to oversell it, but I think this movie is genuinely fantastic, so.
Okay.
So look forward to that. That is the rest of this month. We will be revisiting the horror genre in October, probably with some outside the Hollywood system foreign films, and I'm just fine with that because there's lots of great horror throughout the world.
Are we going to watch Houseu?
We could. That's an option. We haven't decided what that schedule is going to be.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I feel like that's something that's been teased for a long time, even back in the giant bomb days.
Oh, you didn't watch that with us.
No.
I remember we did that film in 40s, and you weren't there for it.
That's right.
Oh, fuck. Okay, we might have to.
Well, look, we'll get there. We'll get there.
We'll talk about it when we get closer to October, but that is probably going to be what we end up doing there.
Well, this has been fun. I really enjoyed, I feel like while Lane was like really interesting, I feel more like a piece of cultural time and place has been filled in my life.
With Lane.
Okay. With Lane is more of like, oh my gosh, this whole thing, like if you're into computers and like this and the post 20 or post 2000, what cinema and Matrix and everything has gone, like Lane seems to fit in and fill in a couple of gaps in that whole thing, and I really appreciate that. And Porco just is a marvelous, charming film,
a treasure. All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up here. As always, thank you, Vinny. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
And thank you to everyone who's been listening and watching at home along with us. We'll see you next time.